You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jeff Rasmussen, a retired Racine Unified teacher and administrator who currently serves as president of the Racine Area Retired Educators Association, Steve Brown, a retired professor of educational leadership, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Manji. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
This is Len Iaquinta, guest hosting for Education Matters. Our topic today is how diverse learners are a focus in UW-Parkside's teacher education. I see it as a critical part of the equity, inclusion, and diversity paradigm for teacher preparation. My guests are two faculty and two students. Shannon Prince, PhD, Assistant Professor in the Institute of Professional Educator Development, fondly known as IPED, at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, and Maria Franshaw, EDD, also an Assistant Professor at the Institute of Professional Educator Development Department at UWP. Also joining us this morning are two teacher education students, Heather Peake and Alexander Martinez. Good morning to you all.
Good morning, Len.
All right. Well, I'm going to turn over the moderating to our two faculty guests who know more about this than I ever will. And Dr. Prince is going to take the lead. Dr. Prince, could you start, please, by telling us why did the faculty develop the course, this principal course we're going to talk about this morning that's at the nexus of all you do in your greater teacher education program, the course called Context and Culture in Learning Environments. It's a great part of the EID emphasis at UW-Parkside teacher preparation. Dr. Prince.
Sure. This class has actually been around long before I arrived, long before Dr. Franshaw arrived. It's been in some iteration for decades. But when we arrived fairly recently, we decided that the class needed some updating. And I would say that every teacher education program has some sort of what we would call a diversity course, but I would consider that to be not a great way of describing it. And it kind of has a negative connotation when it comes to your one-off diversity course where you talk about diversity once and you never do it again. And so when I started thinking about this class and then later collaborating with Dr. Franshaw, we really wanted to revise this course from the ground up, and that's what we did starting in the fall of 2019. And that is why the class exists as it is now, and it's been being taught this way for about four semesters now. But it is definitely something that's been around forever because it has been an essential disposition that is expected of teachers to have an understanding of culture and the context that their students bring to the classroom.
Right, and so part of what we really have done with the course, and like Dr. Prince said, that she had started on this before even I arrived recently, is it's really centered on students being able to explore what they bring personally to their lives and before they can really examine what that will have implications for their teaching. And so reflecting on key terms such as equity and inclusion, diversity, social justice, prejudices, discrimination, stereotyping, so much vocabulary, and Heather and Alex can talk about that and maybe some of the impacts of that. But we go through and beyond that into what Dr. Princeton and I call, the isms, and really talking about others' perspectives and really branching out into, again, what is your personal identity that you're bringing into your identity as an education professional?
Exactly. And we do this essentially by starting out the class as what kind of looks like a traditional class where you've got a textbook and it has vocabulary. But it actually is an extremely personal journey that is occurring. And that's part of why this class is distinctly unique, because normally we're asking our teachers, candidates, to put on their teacher hats, and we're asking them to think like teachers. even while they're still students at Parkside. But for this, especially in the first part of the course, we're really asking you to look at yourself as a human being, not as a teacher at the start. And so that's why we, first of all, make sure that all of our students that are elementary, which is kindergarten through ninth grade licensed, our early elementary, which is pre-K through third grade, and all of our secondary majors, which is about fifth grade to 12th grade, all of them take this course. And they take it together and in a mixed group so that they get all of the perspectives and it's not just geared toward one certain grade level. And it's really important that we put these terms in terms of their own personal experiences. And so we have a particular book that we center the course on, and that is called Is Everyone Really Equal? And it is a wonderful book that really outlines very challenging and very complex terms, and I think very easily to digest ways. So that's a textbook that's written by Sensoy and D'Angelo that is used commonly in teacher education, but I don't think it's actually used as commonly as some would think. It's sort of a book that when I see it being used, I'm quite excited because it is such a great resource. So that's sort of where we get the original, the kind of common vocabulary across the board.
Right. And so launching off of that, really what Dr. Prince was saying about this really is very deeply personal work, and it's multidimensional. And, you know, if you picture a classroom of 30 students, you know, we're all there for the same goals and purposes, but we all bring different lived experiences. Some students have had classes together before, some haven't, but certainly this is a unique collection of who's ever in the course at the same time. And so what happens through the research base and theoretical framework is that it provides foundations for really putting this learning into personal practice. And like Dr. Prince was saying, it's a good half a semester of just learning the vocabulary and learning the terms and really reflecting and being willing to dig deep into lived experiences. And so it also takes time to really listen, truly listen to others. And I think that's another byproduct of the class, is there's so much dialogue that goes on, people really listening to one another and engaging and reflecting and considering others' points of view. And part of what Is Everybody Really Equal brings across is being willing to understand that really what we're all after is honoring the humanity of each other, honoring the humanity of one another, whether it's a passing in a corner store or sharing a course together or being a teacher in a classroom and part of a school and greater community. And so this, you know, like Dr. Prince was saying, this is really challenging heart work before it becomes intellectual work. And the content and skills are really challenging, not just for students at Parkside or students in Wisconsin, but across the United States and certainly our world. We see this in our local, regional, state, and national headlines. And there can be resistance to the work, but I would say that our students have demonstrated quite the opposite in coming to this experience, Dr. Prince, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. So one example to kind of demonstrate something that you might experience in the class is we first talk about this idea of culture. And culture is a term that when we think about it in schools, it can be what we call tokenism, where we're going to have a cultural appreciation day. And so folks from different, usually ethnic or geographical backgrounds, are going to bring forth their cultures. And these are the very safe, and they don't have an emotional attachment. It doesn't offend people to do this, where the students bring in the different food, they'll wear the different clothes, they'll sing the songs of their ancestors, of their geographical and ethnical cultures. But when we talk about culture, we talk about how it is actually the values that you have been socialized to have since you were born. And we think of it as an iceberg. And this is a very common analogy, where culture is actually an iceberg, where the things that are very at the top, very present, those are the easy things like the food from your culture, the dress, the holidays. But as you get deeper under the water of this giant iceberg of culture, it starts to get more emotional. So we have things, parts of your culture, like how do you value courtship and dating? How do you value gender roles? How do you value fill in the blank, continue on, all of the things that make up your culture? And these culture and beliefs, all, every single teacher has. And so culture and beliefs lead to what we call prejudice. And when I talk about prejudice in class, it's the first time I start to get some resistance, if I'm going to get resistance from students, because we have been trained that the term prejudice means something negative, and if you are prejudiced, you are a bad person. And in truth, the term prejudice just simply is a prejudgment. And a prejudgment is, first of all, something that the brain has to do, because you cannot see a person that has obvious identity indicators in front of you, like that person is a woman, that person is white, that person has blonde hair. You have to, in your brain, identify and characterize that person. So we can't take every single person that we see at face value, just as like a new being in front of us. So we have to make a prejudgment. And then those prejudgments tie into our culture. And that's when we have positive or negative feelings generally about certain groups. And they're unavoidable and they're socialized. So we learn them from all of the groups that we interact with since we were born and all the institutions that we become part of later. So when I talk about stereotypes, it's kind of an easier conversation to have because stereotypes are outside of ourselves. And we can list, and I do in class, lots of stereotypes, offensive ones and good ones, like ones that are positive. But then when we start talking about prejudice, I will inevitably always have a student either in class or through an email or through their journal say that they don't have prejudice, despite our continued effort to say there's no such thing as a person without prejudice. And I think it's because of the stigma of this term. And then we get into the term discrimination, which is negative, hurtful action based on prejudice. And so our goal as teacher educators is to allow students to become aware of their prejudice, the implicit bias, some would call it, so that it doesn't impact their disadvantaged students in the classroom. As long as you're aware of them, we can never eradicate them, but we can become aware of them. So that's an example of what one of these personal journeys you will go through. And so I remember when a student, we were in August of last year, we obviously encountered here in Kenosha a lot of media. We became on the national stage because of the Black Lives Matter protests and subsequent civil unrest or riots, and all of this being based on arguments about race and justice and what is fair. And so a class like this becomes that much more real and alive and important for our students when I let our teacher candidates know you're going to be teaching out in a community in Kenosha and Racine and Northern Illinois where this is happening in their backyard. These racial tensions are happening. So that's why we have to talk about these things. And we can't talk about it unless we understand our own place in the world and how we've been socialized. You agree, Maria?
I do. And so, part of that, we talked about much of this region of the country, if not this area of the state, is a very peaceful place to be in general. We talked about this and the dichotomy of being in a peaceful place, but knowing there was so much unrest, really, like Dr. Prince was saying, brought it so close to home for the students. And it seemed like it was remote and in other places, whether it was in Tennessee or Florida or Minnesota or Texas, California, New York, it was always someplace else. But happening here in Kenosha really did bring it home. And having the opportunity to really take stock of our perspectives and realizing that there are perspectives other than our own that do need to be considered, not just for us to be better people, but for us to be the best possible teachers that we can be.
Right. So we brought along some of our students that took the course very recently, and we really want to hear from them and ask them some about, we really wanted you all to hear some of their perspectives about what this course means, because while we can go on and on about how much we love teaching it, it really doesn't matter if we can't hear from the students. So it was really important to Dr. Franchot and I to bring some of our students from Parkside, of whom we are very proud of. So Heather and Alex are both secondary majors. Heather is an English major. She wants to be an English teacher. And Alex wants to be a history teacher. So that's a little bit of background about them. So what were some of the significant experiences that you guys had when you were taking the course?
Hi. So thinking about significant experiences, like you guys touched on the isms that we learned about. Growing up, I went to a predominantly upper class school, so I never really got to see the isms play out in my real life experiences, and I never had a chance to think about how the isms affected those around me. So being in this class at Parkside, I got to think about what not only what the isms are, but the real life implications that go along with that, such as some people not getting accepted for a job because of their racial color, or maybe their religion, just things along that nature. The thing that really stuck out to me from this course was the diversity walk that we did. And for those listening and not knowing what the diversity walk exercise is, Professor Franchot, she'd have us walk forward if a question applied to us. So a question could be, do you guys have someone that cares about you at home? And most people have that, so they'd walk forward. The first set of questions would be questions like that. And then the second set of questions would be more personalized, such as, have you ever gotten pulled over by a cop for seemingly doing nothing wrong? And the point of that walk was to, first off, make us all realize that we're all a family, we're all human, we all have these experiences, and we should all focus on making each other feel welcome. But the second set of questions, it kind of makes us see, okay, we have these common things, but what things don't we have in common? And then we could further the discussion and see where we could help each other in those spots. So that's what stood out to me from the course. I always think of the diversity walk, and I think it's a great principle to apply when talking about these hard discussions.
All right, as for me, one of the most significant experiences came from doing all of our presentations. And as you know, I'm from a history background, so I love doing research papers or researching things that are interesting to me. And for me, some of the most interesting things revolve around race and religion. And so for my presentation, our group did racism. And in my research, I learned about redlining. And redlining is a systemic denial of various services, either by the federal government directly or through private sectors, through like selective raising of prices. This can include like insurance companies or if you're applying for a loan. And these red line zones impacted minorities all over the country, and it impacted them financially as well as their everyday life. And while it was ended in 1968 through the Fair Housing Acts of 1968, its impact is still present today as families have been impacted through the disparity of money that they're able to get because of them just being stuck in this cycle. And something else that impacted me in this class was my classmates' presentations on sexism and classism. And one that really stood out to me was the presentation on sexism. I think I was one of two males that were in her classroom. I think there was like, I want to say over 50 females in her classroom. It was just me and this other guy in her classroom. And I'm a little cheap and I don't like to pay for parking, so we have petrified springs. which is a park near Parkside, and I parked down there, and it's about a 15-minute walk. And our class was at night, so it got dark outside. And that walk is something I don't double think. I just do it. But thinking through all of our experiences in classes, I know most of my classmates wouldn't be able to make that walk, or they wouldn't feel comfortable making that walk, especially since Kenosha County is one of the most impacted counties with human trafficking.
Thank you both for sharing that. The walks on taking perspective about shared experiences versus highlighting differences and disparity was impactful for me to watch you all do that as well, Heather. So thank you for sharing that. What are some reasons that you may think that this course is different, is important rather, for future teachers to participate in, not just at Parkside, but anywhere? What are your thoughts on that?
So for me, I know a lot of what we do as teachers, we all know that we make lesson plans, we think about how to create inclusive classrooms, but this course takes that to the next level, where we specifically focus on how do we make culturally relevant lesson plans. And I think what Dr. Prince and Dr. Franshaw does quite nicely with that is they lay out a whole template where it shows different areas we should be focusing on when creating those lesson plans, such as climate of inclusion. So when you make a lesson plan, you should be looking, how can I create a climate of inclusion in my lesson plan? And they give examples. One will be student input, where you have students take a survey, maybe fill out some things that they're interested in or things they've experienced, and you can include that in your lesson plan. Another example is classroom roles and responsibilities. So you're making the students feel like they're an important, integral part of the classroom. This could be some of them like filling out attendance sheets, some of them just having like a daily duty to do in the classroom. And I think that template is really great because it's taking the students' culture and their interests into consideration. So,
all right, for me, I think it's important to take this class because with all the social unrest that has been present throughout the last year, I think it's really important to educate oneself when it comes to different cultures and being able to create a safe classroom environment where students are free to express themselves however they want. And it's important to continue to grow as an educator throughout that whole process, or else you're not going to be able to get the most out of your students.
That's a good point. We talk about that a lot, Dr. Prince and I and our colleagues mm-hmm. In IPED, about really each one of us is a student, each one of us is a teacher, each one of us has something to learn and something to teach, and that perspective of honoring your future students that way is going to serve them so incredibly well.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges that we have when you teach a course like this, particularly since it tends to be and kind of look like a one-off class, like I mentioned that inappropriate term of a diversity course, because in reality, this is a course that should connect with everything else they're doing in all of their other classes. And so it's our job as a teacher education program to continue to make those connections very obvious. So when we think about how to have a culturally relevant lesson plan or classroom, it's not something where, okay, one day I'm going to assign my students to read books by Black authors. That might be, again, that's a very, a way of thinking about culture where it doesn't even depend on who's in the classroom. It's just I'm exposing my students to unique or diverse kinds of cultures. When in reality, it's much more about whoever's in your classroom, whatever students you have, you're thinking about how you're going to motivate them to make learning meaningful. And that can never happen if the students don't see themselves, their people, their culture being valued in the materials, in the way you teach, in the way you assess. And so as a teacher, if you don't think about the culture, and I mean that deep iceberg of culture that your students are bringing to the table, they are not motivated. And that's a key thing that I know a lot of our teacher candidates struggle with, because they plan all these lessons and the students don't care. And the idea is, well, where are the students in the actual learning? Where are they in the curriculum? And that's really what we're trying to impart here as well, beyond just having a sensitivity to your own implicit biases, so that you will not inadvertently, without any intention to, put one of your students at a disadvantage because of some prejudice or prejudgment you have about them.
So I was wondering too, going along with what Dr. Prince is saying, is, you know, is there something that you've noticed about yourself that you are considering in your interactions as you go about your daily walk because of taking this course? Or is there something that you've been thinking differently about, maybe just even after the completion of your time in the course last fall? Anything you've noticed that's different or that you're applying in your current courses?
As you guys know, when taking this course, it might be uncomfortable at first to have those difficult conversations. I think for the first couple weeks of class, you mostly got crickets from us students when you'd open the floor for discussion. You just need to have those difficult conversations to learn and grow. So going along with that, I am much more willing to have difficult conversations. I am much more willing to have an open ear. I want to be a supporter of those who want to share their stories and what they're facing, whether it be discrimination or prejudice. And also, like, if I think something about someone, I catch myself saying to myself, do I think that based off of fill in the blank? So I kind of am self-regulating my thoughts and making sure that I'm trying to make sure that I don't have pre-based notions about people. And I think that'll help me be a teacher too, because I want to be like accepting and supporting my students.
All right, as for me, I wouldn't say my interactions with people have changed too much. If anything has changed since taking this course, it's I think I'm trying to be more understanding of what people could be going through. So I try to put myself in their shoes and see what could be going on in their lives that it's impacting them to act the way that they're acting, or, you know, just try to keep more of an open mind when it comes to the struggle of other people. And like, coming from my background, I'm a Hispanic person who lives in the United States, and I've experienced my fair share of discrimination or prejudices as well. But I think it's important to be able to reflect on those experiences and help others go through their experiences as well.
Absolutely. I remember we also do spend a moment to talk about specifically about the Wisconsin Native Nations. And that is because of a issue where we have this requirement from the Department of Public Instruction, DPI, to have explicit instruction on the Wisconsin Native Nations. And so we decided as a program to put it in this course, because that would ensure that when we're talking about all the groups, we're talking about this very significant group, and particularly one that means something in our state. And so one of the things that I did that was kind of a afterthought is I put up a slide of a bunch of terms that come from derogatory or have negative connotations about Indigenous people or Native Americans. And so just last semester, so this student had taken this course and it had been 3 semesters, and she said to me that she still never uses the term spirit animal, which was a term on that list, because she never knew that that was a term that had a negative connotation for that group. And she was glad that she learned that, and she's like taught herself. And so just getting that feedback from students is part of the reason why we just keep pushing forward, because it might take some time for some of this stuff to sink in. But I think about just having a brief conversation specifically about Indigenous people, and then thinking about, oh, the next day there's a news story about, you know, Jeep having to, you know, being asked to change the name Jeep Cherokee, and how do you feel about that? And I wonder if their thoughts about the class are coming up. I wonder if that had an impact. They have something new to think about and a new way to consider that. And that's definitely something that we hope that they take with them.
This is Len. You've just tuned in. This edition of Education Matters has the topic of diverse learners being a focus in UW Parkside's teacher education program. And our guests this morning are Assistant Professors Shannon Prince, Maria Franshaw, and 2 of their teacher education students, Heather Peak and Alexander Martinez. Go ahead.
So, Maria, I have a question for you. I was wondering, because we both taught the course and we both thought about it in our own way, but how would you say that this course is really important for teacher education in our program?
Oh, that's a great question. So, you know, we haven't gone through the whole sequence of Parkside's teacher education program's commitment to really addressing equity and inclusion. This is such a well-placed course, you know, between the sophomore and senior years. And so why I think this is so important, and it encapsulates so much of what Heather and Alex have said, is it's really moving beyond just having a tolerance, because the word tolerate is used so much when it comes to diversity, right? Just tolerating other people and other people's cultures, to really getting to know other people and honoring them and embracing cultures and empowering students through cultural relevancy and being a culturally proficient educator. And I think that, to me, that's one of the most important parts of it, is really becoming the best teacher you can be without this component of you. To me, just doesn't feel balanced at all. It's work that I've been doing for decades as a teacher and teacher educator. So what do you think about that, Dr. Prince?
I think back to 100 years ago when I was in teacher education and I was getting my teaching license, and I took what we would call a diversity class, and I read a book that was specifically about the pipeline of how African-American boys tend to, through the education system, be on a pipeline toward the prison system. And we talked about this book at length, but I don't remember ever feeling like I left that class having done any self-growth. I think it was actually a class that kind of made us all feel better about about the work we were doing, thinking about African American boys. I went to the university that I went to was particularly known for its lack of diversity. So it was a class that just sort of, I didn't feel challenged at all. But there was that need back then, because for many decades now, there have been teacher educator standards and the CAPE accreditation standards. And these standards ask teacher education programs to assess their students on their ability to think about and incorporate diversity in sensitive ways, not just for special education students, but for even students like English language learners, but for all students. And I think that while that's always been there in terms of it's a Wisconsin educator standard, particularly we're thinking about in Wisconsin, the educator standards, there's 10 of them. And the second one particularly is about diversity of your learners. And then you go into even teaching your content, you're expected in those standards to teach your content in ways that are relevant to your students and their communities. So you are an effective teacher if you can link what's your content to what's going on in their communities. And that's culturally relevant. That's what that is. So we do have at a, you know, evaluation program and state level asking us to do this. However, in our society, in our political climate, it's made things particularly muddy sometimes, where what used to be, I would find just a couple of years ago, a simple thing to talk about, like where it's not going to be like talking about police brutality wasn't necessarily considered a political conversation. It was considered a human rights conversation or a social justice conversation. And I've noticed in the last couple years that these conversations, I hit some walls with students because this has now become somehow a political Democrat, liberal, conservative, Democrat, Republican kind of weird issue. And I've had to navigate that. And that's something that is we're always working on and makes it even more important that we're talking about this so that we can continue to show that these are about humanizing teaching and humanizing your students, not necessarily a political issue.
Absolutely. Another thing that the events of August brought to us, right, was opportunities for us to really pause and reflect deeply about how, while we may have felt like this was far away, if we were honest with ourselves, it was always much closer to home than we thought. Whether it's and it's not just about being Black or biracial, like Alex said, we have Hispanic, we have Asian, we have so many different ethnic and racial groups not experiencing equitable experiences. I don't like to use the word treatment because it's really about having the opportunity to just live your life in an equitable way. So, right, like you say, Dr. Prince, it's not political. It's human.
Yeah. Did you have any like challenges like that when you were teaching it?
So like Heather said, there were some opportunities where I think the challenges were there's so much trust you have to have when you're building these opportunities for reflection and opportunities for discussion, especially, you know, teaching in a COVID dynamic, right? So, you know, with social distancing or whether it was virtual classes, just being able to put things out there for students to have conversations on, really trusting that they're bringing their true selves to the conversations. And that happens at different times for different people. You know, you just have to keep trusting that you're putting it out there. And part of that is the same thing as we're modeling for our future teachers, right? Is that we're building relationships with our students and building trust with them so that in return, they feel that they really can put themselves out there in vulnerable and brave ways. Like Heather said, really have those difficult conversations. And some people ready to do that on day two, some people may be ready day 12. But that's part of also the reflection journal piece, right? Because that's more private and personal to a student. So if you weren't really ready to talk about everything, you were putting it in your reflective practitioner journal, which was an important component of this course as well.
I actually, you really brought up a point that I hadn't thought about, but one of the biggest challenges as I currently teach it this semester right now is the situation that we have because of COVID. So we're teaching in socially distanced classrooms. So I have a class of about 17 students that are spread out in a lecture hall for 200. And so we have this tremendous physical space between them. And because I am pretty strict and very conscientious about maintaining as much social distance as possible, I don't have them move around from their assigned seat because we don't want students to be just sitting together in groups. So that gets rid of the dynamic of a small group discussion, which is a complete contrast to when I taught this class a year ago. I had 6 beautiful weeks pre the shutdown where we were in a room that had, it was like 425 and there were 18 students in there. So we were quite literally on top of each other. And so you can imagine the difference between that environment.
This is Len Aquina back. It sounds like you need to be doing breakout groups in Zoom. But I don't know how to combine both in class and out of class doing Zoom. That's a harder trick. I'd like to conclude by asking each of our faculty contributors this morning to answer this question. As faculty in the Institute of Professional Educator Development, what has preparing for and teaching this course taught you? Dr. Shannon Prince, please.
For me, I actually believed firmly when I was sort of given the opportunity to teach this class when I started at Parkside 2 years ago, I thought I wasn't qualified to teach this class, despite coming from an institution like Michigan State University that is one of they're trailblazers on the topic of this kind of teaching. And I had to do all of the work that our students have gone through myself and take stock in what I had gone through when I was in grad school and allow myself to be okay with the fact that I represent, like many of our students at Parkside, though not all of our students at Parkside, the typical teacher, which is a white middle class woman from a usually like suburban or middle class family. And because I was that.
And now, you made it though. You made it through. And now, Dr. Maria Franshaw, what did you take away from the experience?
Thank you, Len. This won't surprise Heather or Alex, I don't think at all. We are all students and teachers, and in a profession where we absolutely must be doing both, I just have so much great appreciation for the contributions of the students. And so one of the things that the course not necessarily taught me but reaffirmed is that we're in great hands with these future teachers. We, Heather and Alex and their Parkside peers, are passionate about equity, humanity, social justice, inclusion. And moreover, their bravery and vulnerability doesn't stop there. They're committed and compelled to reaching out to family, friends, and peers, and to really invite others to do this work. Of course, I can't talk about any specific examples of that, but you know, it's important. And I just also want to add that, you know, two decades into the 21st century, and technology is wonderful because we're not only have these great books, but able to bring in TED Talks or videos or audio or any podcasts or anything into actually bringing in very diverse voices and stories and lived experiences into this. And so I think there's so much more work to do, but we're in great hands.
Yes, we're in the start of the third decade of the 21st century. Who would have thought? And when I started plying my trade as a journalist, we were using manual typewriters and pencils and rubber cement to glue takes, sheets of paper together to form our stories. What a change. And the changes in your lifetimes, Heather and Alexander, are going to be mind-blowing. Thank you to our guests from the Professional Educator Development Degree Program at UW Parkside this morning. They were the two faculty members, Dr. Shannon Prince and Dr. Maria Franshaw, and students, future teachers, great teachers, Heather Peake and Alexander Martinez. So for Education Matters, this is Len Aquinta reminding that we never stop learning or learning about learning. Good day.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.